This episode is sponsored by Sanebox, a great way to focus on the important emails and boost your productivity.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets rally for a second month. Value blows away growth for the week. Threats to China have no immediate impact, and our guest today is Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. All this and much more on episode number 664 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. As promised, our guest today is Frank Curzio from Curzio Research, and we have got to talk about a lot because Frank and I talk offline all the time, and I thought it would be a good time. We haven't had him on for, 6 or 8 weeks to come back on the other side of all that's going on right now and kind of figure out and dig down into what is actually happening here. So, Frank, how are you? Welcome back.
Good. Thanks for having me on, man.
So how's your hair? Is it long?
No, I got a first hit. I live in Northern Florida, and there really wasn't a lockdown here. I mean, yeah, the restaurants closed, but yeah, you can go to drive-thrus. It wasn't crazy where people were staying in their houses, where a lot of bike riding, and it wasn't crazy. So we opened up pretty quick, probably about 2 weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago. And yeah, I was able to get a haircut, which was awesome. So
yeah, I still don't have a haircut, and it's starting to get like thick. You know what I mean? And kind of like where you lay down is like you're 2 inches, 3 inches off the pillow. Kind of thing. So I got to do that. I was thinking about doing it myself, but I don't think that's going to work.
Maybe. I mean, it got to the point where I had actually someone cut it for me once and it wasn't that good, but I loved it because it was so bad before that. But right. Now I really got a real haircut and it looks a little bit better.
Yeah. And have you been, so what's going on in terms of, I went out formally, I've taken the boat out, I've done a few things, but I formally went out last night for the first time. I went to the club. And it was kind of awkward, I mean, like, where do I stand? What do I do? Who do I talk to? How do I go up to them? Do I wear a mask? Don't I wear a mask? You're not allowed to just, like, get to the bar and stand there. It's only table service. And it was kind of just a weird, and everybody was talking about the weirdness of it. Is that kind of the experience you've had?
It was about 3 weeks ago. Then it got better 2 weeks ago. Now 1 week. But I just think it's funny where the people who wear a mask yell to people that don't, and the people that don't are like, why are you wearing a mask? It's like everybody wants you to do what they're doing, right? Yeah. And this is a place where you should be practicing social distancing. We all get it. If you're older, not going out as much, definitely wearing a mask. I get it. My mom has respiratory problems, and she was in ICU for 4.5 months and got out just before, like, mid-January. Now she's doing better. But I just think it's funny when you're looking at people where, we've been to places, my wife and I, where we went to get ice cream for the kids. And a lady had a mask on, said, you can't go inside. And my wife was like, what are you talking about? And then she opened up the door and she went inside and said, are we allowed to come inside? She's like, yeah, the person owned the place. And there was a lady actually telling us that we couldn't, but yet she was getting ice cream. And I don't know if she went to the drive-thru or whatever, but there's like a give and take here. Where
doesn't seem like, though, that over the last few years it's become that much more of this continual divide. You're either on this side or that side. There's no kind of, like, everybody's got to, like, tell everybody else what to do, how to do it, how they feel. Their side is the right side, versus it's kind of like, a crazy sports fan that only loves their team no matter what.
I'm going to be honest with you. As crazy as it sounds, I think we could see, like, another civil war.
Oh, it's funny you mentioned that. My wife said that this morning.
The divide right now, and I understand politics, right? People hate Trump. People hate the liberals. I get it. But if you're looking at the world today, where how is anybody condoning the fact that with everything going on, I understand, the cop getting arrested and the whole Floyd case. I get it. I understand. I don't want to get political here, but we're burning down police stations and people are defending that. We're seeing people throw things at cops. And, I have a lot of friends that are cops, and they're, out of all my friends, if I say I have 20 of them, I'd say 3 or 4 of them are really, like, shouldn't be cops. and the rest of them are really, really good guys. Most of them are really good guys. And what's going on right now that you're even in the social media where we're not even showing, we're showing how terrible this is, how the country's bad. You can't go after people. You can't burn cars in the street. I mean, this is America.
I never really understood this dynamic.
Crazy.
So I never understood this dynamic. The dynamic is that we're pissed off about something, right? Whatever it is. And we burn down our own neighborhood, loot our own stores, burn our own houses. We had this down in Florida a number of years ago, right? And they just destroy their own area. I mean, I think that, you know, go a couple of towns over, you know, walk a little bit and burn that down. But why are you burning down your own stuff? I never really kind of got that dynamic.
You know what's weird, too? I think the country, whether what race you are, we're all on the right side of this thing that's going on right now. I mean, we all saw what, you know, you're pinning someone down. You have your knee on his head and he's defenseless. So come on. We're all on the same side. And yet there's still massive riots. And it's almost like, you know, you can't even go in there at reporters on both sides. They're like running away with CNN or Fox and chasing them. I mean, this is America. It's I mean, the divide right now and the hate right now, you talk to people too, right? If you talk to people, if you're conservative and you have a friend that's a liberal, you can hang out and talk to them and have a great time. When it gets to social media, it's like crazy.
Well,
you
turn into this crazy person. So I think that's part of it. It's interesting because if you actually look at the video, some of the stuff going on, right? What do you see the most of? Yeah, there's people that are kind of like, you know, putting their chest out and yelling and screaming and moving things around and pushing things and throwing a bottle. It's cameras. It's all about getting the picture, getting the video, you know, because people are like, hey, I was there. You know, so they go out to these things, causing more of a ruckus with all the people there, right? And causing more crowds. Only because they want to capture this to have a live stream on Facebook or on Twitter or, you know, wherever they're doing it, or to put it up there that, hey, look what was going on. They pick the worst situation or the best, right? Depending on where you want to, what you want to portray. But I think it is because of the advent of what we have, the capabilities these days. Everybody's a mini reporter. Everybody's trying to stir trouble or at least prove their point, because I think everybody wants to be right so badly that they'll do anything to get there. And we can talk about this for hours, but, you know, it is a really sad situation. I do agree with you that and the potential for civil war. I mean, who are the sides?
I mean, just the divide.
Jets versus Giants fans? No?
No, the divide that you're seeing is just crazy, right? I mean, it's for me, what I'm looking at, it's the anger. And even when you're looking, like you said, whoever has a camera, like I live in Florida, you live in Florida, you live in Southern Florida. So our lockdown wasn't really a lockdown. U.S. might have been a little bit, you know, more populated.
Right.
But you're looking at these pictures come up where they'll show a bunch of kids acting like idiots and being close together and say, look at the whole of Florida. This is the biz. What happened when you open the beaches? 99% of the beaches aren't like that. You got a picture of a bunch of idiots. And that's the one they show because there's an entertainment factor. People could argue about it. They could yell about it. They're going to watch on TV. They're going to send it to everybody. And that's the new world.
If you have a picture or a video of an empty beach,
nobody's going to watch. Who cares?
That? Oh, look at the waves. Look at the palm trees. It's beautiful. No, nobody's watching that.
No.
It's only the most intense and divisive style. And that's kind of like spilled over into a lot of areas, you know. And I guess we can talk about that with regard to the thoughts on the economy and the markets as well, because I think that divide has really caused a lot of problems and maybe inequity. And I mean, you look at what's going on. We have an economy that we're going to see probably north of 20 million unemployed in next week's unemployment number, maybe about 17 or 18% unemployment. We have a GDP that's down 5% this quarter. That was the second quarterly revision that we saw, probably moving down a little bit, but then next quarter down 30, 40%. Stock markets are recovering dramatically, helping the wealthy. Some stocks are at all-time highs. I mean, some stocks have a long way to go, of course. But yet, people in one area are suffering, while others, it's back to the haves and have-nots. It's back to the Wall Street against Main Street again as well. So maybe there's going to be multiple civil wars here, right? Multiple factions that are going to be having some problems. I mean, I can't see the guys that are, you know, the hedge fund guys, you know, it's not going to be like the hedge fund group like in that are going to go against, you know, the unemployed. I mean, that's not going to be a faction, right?
No. But, you know, when I look at what's going on right now, and you and I always love debating about the economy, right? We always talk about the economy. Yep. It's what we grew up in, and we make it fun, and we talk about GDP numbers and unemployment. And, you know, from someone who's been doing this for over two decades and yourself, these numbers don't matter. I mean, you got to rethink and you have to unlearn stuff. When you're looking at unemployment, who cares if unemployment is 40%? I mean, think about it. Unemployment is at 40%. What does that mean? There's people, usually what it means is people don't have jobs. When people don't have jobs, they're not going to spend. Your friends and family that have jobs, they see people who don't. That scares them and they close their wallets. The people on unemployment have more money now than they had before they got fired or laid off. So they're getting checks. They're making more money on unemployment. Then they're getting a free check for anywhere between $2,000 and $4,000. You're promoted to have as many kids as you want because you get a check for $10,000 because it's $500 a kid. Then you're looking at another $3 trillion coming, right?
I don't know about that, but yeah.
I mean, they came out of nowhere. Like you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, they'll get together and pass something like, whatever, a $2 trillion bill. But, you know, you think about what we're talking about here. We're talking about $3 trillion, right? TARP was $475 million when all is said and done.
Billion.
Right?
Started out
billion. Billion, right? When all is said and done.
Right.
If we pass another $3 trillion, it's going to be 12 and a half times more than what we paid and what we use for stimulus to bail out the entire financial system. And people, I mean, I'm seeing it now with everything open. Everything is jam-packed. People are spending money like they never spent it before. And maybe they've been, and I'm not talking about things like, oh, they're making up, you know, they're in houses. I mean, discretionary items. Look at cars. So you're going to see cars, homes, every home that goes on sale is gone.
Inventory is at the lowest level it is because people didn't want people in their houses. We're seeing that several of the builders are getting towards the highs again. And what's interesting about that is there's this de-urbanization concept going on. Deposits came in at Toll Brothers and D.H. Horton last week were really much greater than they've seen in a long time. Boat sales, small boat sales off the hook. I have friends that are in the business. They are like, we don't know. We went dark for a month and a half. And then when we kind of all of a sudden on the other side of this, people are like, I want a boat. I want a trailer. I don't want to be locked up into my house. Winnebago or mobile home sales are just out of control. Now, there are other things that won't be, right? There'll be some areas that will be problematic, some companies that won't be able to make it. But, you know, the 60 to 70%, I think the number came out this week, 60 to 70% of the people that are getting the $600 per week unemployment check are getting more with that than they made with their job previously.
Yeah.
That's a big statement.
That's the thing. Is so, and I'll ask you this question, right? You interviewed me. Let me interview you.
Yep.
How do you look at the unemployment rate and say this is something that is, you know, this used to be an indicator we looked at where, well, wow, this is single economy's not doing that good. So you're gonna see people spend less. And that's a big driver of the economy, and then, you know, filters down to profits. But if these people are making more money, the unemployment rate doesn't really matter, right?
That is correct. We've actually socialized capitalism. That's what we've done. That there's no question about that. I don't even think if you'd like to debate me on it, I'd be happy to talk about it. But if you really think about it for a second, that's exactly what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken the money from the government and we poured it into the economy in a variety of different manners, whether it's from corporate bailouts to forgivable loans to unemployment compensation. Now that unemployment compensation is supposedly going to run out July 31st. And I think there's some very good reason why they should not renew that if they want to really get this economy back to where it is. I mean, the problem is going to be that interim period of when they stop that and or reduce that and get back to somewhere of a normal unemployment rate. But
good
at
luck,
the same time,
good luck
Frank,
good luck with that.
Well, the Republicans are saying, hey, there's no way they're going to extend it. And I mean, the Democrats want to spend $3 trillion, which I don't even understand how that works. Those numbers don't even makes sense. But there's a lot of discussion. I had this discussion on DH Unplugged this week. And I talked about how, you know, you're going to see a lot lower tax revenue coming into the municipality. So John Dvorak, my co-host, he said, well, what's the play on that? I'm like, well, there is no play because it's been blocked by the Fed. You would want to short municipal bonds or something of that nature. You want to look into that area. But the problem is that they're buying it. Okay. And I talked about how a lot of companies are going to possibly get downgrades. They're issuing a lot more debt and they don't have the revenue right now, at least in the near future. And they're going to see some downgrades, you know, the Fallen Angels. And he says, well, how do I play that? I'm like, well, what you do is you would short like a junk bond fund or you look for some of these bonds that were going to move from an investment grade to a non-investment or a sub, you know, sub triple B. And you'd short those somehow. You go against them. He says, that sounds like a good idea. I said, you can't. He goes, why? I guess the Fed blocked it. The Fed's coming in just buying all this stuff.
You can't short anything. You know what's different about this market is when we went through the credit crisis, which is, you know, the comparable one, right? We didn't know the extent of the damage. Nobody knew what was going on. There was a very few people who knew what was going on. Nobody knew about CDOs. Nobody knew they were pulling these loans together. Nobody knew they were paying off the rating agencies to get AAA ratings to make, and then they were leveraged times. It wasn't subprime that caused this crisis. It was the leverage of 40 times, right? That's what caused it, right? Subprime was a small market, but you leveraged the hell out of it. You needed a 5% decline in homes. Nobody knew the extent. And AIG came up. Remember then you know, Fannie, all this stuff. Now, the banks are talking directly to the government. They're saying, okay, look, you know, CLO market, right? That's the collateralized loan obligation market right now is huge. That's like private equity debt. That's very aggressive debt. They meet with the Fed, meet with the president and say, hey, this is a market that we could see, you know, all the banks, right? This is a market that we could see trouble in. They didn't announce they were going to buy high yielding stuff, right? They didn't announce that until later on. That wasn't even on the table. High yielding, you're bailing out the guys that are the most leveraged that are supposed to get crushed in this market. That wasn't an initial announcement when they announced this thing. The $2.3 trillion. So they have the banks talk to, okay, this market looks bad. Okay, we'll bail it. We got you back. But I don't think they understand how much money $1 trillion is. When you're seeing it, all this filter in, it's incredible. I mean, I keep using that word. I just, the amount of money coming in where we're passing trillions like it's $1 billion today, it's hard to make a case. And believe me, because I made it, that stocks are going to go lower because everything is bailout and people are on the wrong side still. That's what's explaining this big rally. I mean, this big rally is from hedge funds and money managers. There's more money in cash and more money is in savings. I mean, you look at how much people are worried and now they're all caught off sides and now they're running back to the market. You're seeing that even with value.
I get it. But the problem is going to be, the problem is that they have to totally disregard not only the economic backdrop, but they have to disregard everything they know about valuing stocks. That's the problem. And you have some shops that just, you can't do that. Exactly. You know, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about earnings and thoughts on Q1 and Q2. So first question I have, Q1 was like, wow, that was a lot better than I anticipated, right? Well, we know that part of Q1, if we just take the monthly, and obviously a lot of companies aren't fiscal, so you don't know exactly when they start and end unless you look at that. But let's just look at the first quarter, the first 3 months of the year. And really, we only started to see that problem starting in March, let's call it, right? Give or take. So you have one month of the 3 months that is maybe problematic. You have a couple months that maybe were good with everything going swimmingly along. Do you think that some of these beats that we're seeing from quarter one were due to the fact that some companies are saying, you know, let's pull forward as much as we can through accounting processes in terms of revenue and earnings, make Q1 look really good, build up the stock, because Q1, we're telling everybody, hey, you know, Q2 is, you know, it's going to be bad. It's going to be really bad. So let's just pull it forward and then see what happens from there.
I mean, the pull it forward here is forget about 2020. It doesn't matter, right? And to me, that's amazing. Like for guys like us who, again, we look at economics and we look at earnings. We always talk about that every time. When I'm interviewing you on my podcast, Wall Street Employee, you're interviewing me. We always talk about that, right? The earnings factor. But think about this. A company lowering, a growth company, right? Supposed to report good numbers, right? Show 15, 20% growth because they have a PE of 30X, whatever, which is not expensive. If you're growing, that's fine, right? You're growing fast. This company comes out on earnings normally, right? What would happen if they lower their earnings by 10% or they miss and then they would lower their guidance for next quarter?
Yep.
You're talking about a 20% decline in the stock, right? I mean, that's normal. Now you could remove all of 2020 and you're getting rewarded. Like that means I don't know if earnings are going to be down 30% or 95%. We don't know, but your stock, it's like we gave these companies permission to say, okay, 2020 is a wash. And I'm on board with that. I had a suck it up and say, okay, I get it. 2020 is a wash if that's the way we're going to play. Let's look at 2021. If you look at 2021 earnings, they're not going to be greater than they were in 2019, which means right now where stocks are trading, it's not saying that we're going to go back to normal. It's saying we're going to have the best conditions in the history of the United States. I don't know if I agree with that. I definitely don't agree with that.
Analysts just dropped their earnings. They were at 150 or so for a while, 160 for a while for 2020. They just dropped them down to like 120, 125.
They're going to be 110-ish. Yeah, 110.
And we're still not getting any reaction to that, by the way. But okay. No. You know, still
2020 is a wash.
Yeah, which is insane, by the way. That's the thing that's going around to make everybody believe and to brainwash you to believe that don't worry about any of these numbers, which is kind of stupid. Just let's be honest. You know, we want to believe that, Frank. We want to be, you know, on with that because it's just like, why fight it? But really, I mean, intellectually, it's kind of stupid, right?
It's really stupid, but you just said something like right before, why fight it? For me, what I've learned in my investment career is I'm stubborn on some things, right? We're all stubborn and we're set in our ways. In the market, and especially the last 10 years when I've had my best returns, I've learned to adapt to market conditions.
Yeah.
I learned to understand them. And this, where I, you know, we were really ahead of this a couple of weeks saying, guys, listen, China's closed. That's a growth model of the world. Just take some profits. If I'm wrong, it's not going to cost you. If I'm right, this market could really come down to coronavirus spreads. A month and a half in, I look like a genius. After that, I didn't see, I didn't think this would be solved in 2 months, right? So we invested in positions and we're okay, but, you know, we didn't go all in. Now, you know, little by little, we're getting into the market. But you have to be careful, I think, as an investor where you get stubborn in your ways. You're like, this is, and you're just sitting there going, this is crazy. This is crazy. You know, I have to accept the fact you have to accept 2020 is a wash. Companies are going to come out with earnings and they're going to say, you know, we're removing our guidance and go up. I mean, Disney's a good example of this. I've been talking about Disney. Disney could get cut in half from here and it'd still be the most expensive company in the Dow next to Boeing. And you're talking about a company that leverages itself tremendously to get into streaming, which is the worst business in the world.
Yep.
The worst business. Nobody makes money on it. $43 billion in debt. The company's trading at 45 times forward earnings, most expensive valuation ever. And this isn't a company that's going to see a massive rebound. I mean, all their businesses are going to be impacted. I mean, Disney parks go, they're never going to be at 100% capacity again. 80% is going to be the new 100%.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. It's just, you know, for me, I'm looking going, holy cow. But the point of me, you know, going over this part is you have to be willing to adapt. And right now there's a lot of cash still in a lot of money in cash and not into these stocks. I think that's what you're seeing, but it is one of the most risky markets ever. So if you're going in, use stops, be careful, but it's risk on right now, which again is surprising me because I have to, you know, relearn everything.
Yeah, I hear you. We're talking with Frank Curzio from CurzioResearch.com. Great newsletters, has some freebies that you could check out, all sorts of great videos, Twitter live streams and all that. We're going to take a quick second to talk about something, and we're going to come back because I have a lot more to talk about with Frank. So let me take a second and discuss something with you. I don't know about you, but what's going on with emails these days? I mean, it's out of control. You get spam, junk, unwanted advertisements. You know what I mean? It is so distracting, and I got to tell you something. It's a huge time waster trying to sift through your emails all day, every day. But I found a great solution for you. It's called SaneBox, and it uses an artificial intelligence monitoring system for your inbox. What happens is that it basically scans all of your inboxes, and every email service works with this, and it separates the most important emails that you want to see from the ones that are just, I mean, simply time wasters. The emails that you need are in your inbox, and those that you don't are, well, scooted over to the Sane Later inbox. And working with it is really easy. If you know how email folders work, well, you got it. You know how SaneBox works. Find an email in the wrong folder, well, just move it. Nothing to learn, nothing to install. SaneBox works directly with every single email server or service that has ever been created. So you can get it for free and a $25 credit by visiting SaneBox.com/TDI. That's SaneBox.com/TDI. All right, so back to our discussion with Frank, and we're going to talk about, I got a lot of things to throw at you here, Frank.
Yeah, so, buddy, I'm ready.
You're ready?
Yep.
Okay, so have you, I've noticed something recently that I thought was kind of funny, just something, I don't know. A couple of years back, there was this move into stocks that was pretty exciting, where a company would say something like, oh, we're now working with the blockchain, right? And what would happen? Stock would go crazy, right?
Yep.
You'd have these companies like, I don't know, like a pet food company that says they're going to be working on the block. They're getting involved in the blockchain. Everything goes crazy. Nobody knows why. But as long as you can say that you were working in them, now we have something that's happening very similar to that. Whereas if you say COVID-19, that we're doing something with COVID-19, whether you're Pepsid, the anti-gas and company, what they're doing something there, or AstraZeneca, which says, you know, we're thinking about it, or even Moderna. Let's talk about that, right? Moderna, I was really kind of, when I saw what was going on with Moderna, I was like, oh God, I've seen this. Somehow I feel like I've seen this movie before. Comes out, the CEO is all over the place, right? They're building it up. They don't have anything to ever released by this company in the past. And all of a sudden, they're going to go into a phase one. And everybody's like, yes, we'll go to phase one. I'm thinking, wait, phase one's not what we want to be excited about, right? Phase one is just like, all right, let's get this, make sure this thing doesn't kill anybody.
You know what I think is so funny about that? So Moderna came out, it was that Monday, right? And I think stocks came down the week before, if I remember. And then that came out, and I think the stock market rose like 700-800 points. I think it was, you know, like 2.5-3% across the board. It was the biggest news ever. 2 days later, you had infectious disease specialists come out and say, guys, the data was okay. It wasn't anything to get crazy excited about. So, and then you saw, you know, that same day on Monday, CEO going crazy, saying, yeah, things are great. And what did they do? Morgan Stanley went out there and they raised, what, $1.5 billion or something at $76. Right. And the stock was at 80. It's all-time high. Now it's in the 50s, low 50s, right? So, you know, they screwed out all their clients, which I guess is normal investment banking business. Yeah, that's cool.
That's the business.
But even when – now, a couple of days later, I think it was the next day, you know, you had those infection stocks saying, all right, this data isn't, like, amazing. This isn't great. It's still, you know, nothing it's promising, yes. But, you know, guys, so the closest – the fastest we've ever got a vaccine to market was 4 years. 4 years. Okay, that was mumps. I think it was a 1967. 4 years. We're trying to get this to the market. Like, this, that's not going to happen. I mean, if it happens, there's no way I would take it. I mean, it's just not enough
safety. Right. Well, it's going to be super fast tracked. Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, am I really going to take something that I don't even know if I need? And if I'm in the right demographic where I don't have respiratory problems, I'm under 50 years old, barely these days. But, you know, am I going to take something that hasn't really been tested like all the other vaccines? And then the stock market just kept going up after that. Like it rose because of that data and people were positive about that. And then all of a sudden it just kept rising, even though it was kind of discredited a little bit. It was just anything that's a positive or a negative, and we've seen these market conditions, is a positive for this market. So
news, any kind of news at all is a positive. You know, whether the Fed comes out and says they're going to be dropping down each and every week, they've been dropping down their purchases of bonds, and it's kind of like, okay, it's fine. You know, we like it, but they're still buying at least. But it's really kind of fascinating because I've seen company after company come out with this. But the Moderna thing is, I think one of the things I want to mention about this and why I want to bring this up was because that was a classic pump and dump. Even, you know,
insiders sold out on the way up at the top. They was dumping their shares. Yep. Go ahead.
Right. So, I mean, that just be aware that there's a lot of that going on right now. There's a lot of euphoria, people thinking, oh, my gosh, we get a vaccine, we're going to have a cure, even though that may be past a date that we can actually utilize it for, if, in fact, there is another wave or whatever comes from this. But just realize something that, you know, there's a lot of people trying to get your money these days and trying to, you know,
a lot of BS out
weasel
there.
You yes. out of your profits. So just be kind of ultra aware of some of that.
I want to ask you, it's on the Moderna topic. I'm going to ask you a question. It's going to be cool. So if you're looking at Moderna, say if they're right, and they produce a vaccine in, say, 3 months, right, which is impossible. But say in 3 months, right, that data is so good. Say Moderna what's going to happen then? And what would happen standard, right? What are they going to do? What would happen after they produce a vaccine that works?
The stock would go up.
Yeah, the stock would surge, and then we're going to mass produce it, right? So I invest in biotech for over 2 decades. I love the sector. What do you think is going to happen? Because there's over 40 companies doing the same thing. What normally should happen if Moderna comes up with it and they're first to the market, what should happen with the rest of the companies? They should be getting destroyed, especially ones that are pure plays. I'm not talking about the AstraZeneca or the Johnson & Johnson.
Right.
I'm talking about Novo Pharmaceuticals.
Novavax and stuff like that, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. They're pure plays, which means that that massive revenue you're supposed to get is going to somebody else. Okay. We see that all the time when there's a study, even a phase two or phase three that's positive on a specific drug. The company who owns that market, that stock will go down 15-20% because now you're looking at something else that's competing that's going to take the market share.
Mm-hmm.
It's Moderna came out with this news, and everybody that produces or is working on a vaccine, all stocks went up, which is like,
I'm telling you, well, you know
why?
Going
down.
No, it's because they're the number one. Moderna is the number one position in the XBI, which is the ETF. People are just blindly buying the ETF, and it's taken up everything. So they figure that, you know what, Moderna's in there. They happen to be the number one position. Instead of just buying Moderna, let's just buy all of it. And that's part of the problem of, or the good and bad news is kind of a double edged sword. With the markets, is these ETFs you could just buy for $50 or for $10,000 at one shot an entire segment of the market.
Yeah, you're right, and a lot of that is ETF. It's just amazing where listen, you're unlearning. It's kind of this really feels like the .com era, which majority of listeners probably don't really remember that. We you know, of course, the credit crisis. We have young listeners, but Yeah, the dot-com era in 1997-98, people started saying, like, stocks are crazy. This is nuts. This is crazy. And then it started to go down a little bit, I think, in 1999. And then the NASDAQ doubled
yep.
in 1999. And 1 year to the top. And then you saw the massive crash. So I don't know if we're going to see that, because back then when the market crashed, we didn't have the government coming in and saying, no, we got your back. Everyone is leveraged. Now we're going to bail you out. You're fine. Like the oil industry. We're going to bail all you guys out, even though you've been leveraged.
I hear you. You know, the thing about Moderna, too, is the other question you have to ask, or about all these companies, are they going to be massive profits on this either, if it's going to be something that's going to be helpful to society in general, right? Is the government going to allow them to charge what they should be able to charge for this drug?
Moderna's partnering with the government with this, and a lot of these things are getting fast-tracked by the government. Plus, you know, who knows what the profits are actually going to be. Right. Goldman Sachs has their report. They have $102, $105 target price on Moderna. They have $51 million in revenues, mostly from royalties. They don't have any approved drugs, Moderna. And next year, $8.5 billion in sales.
Right.
Like, whoa. What about $2 billion? No, $8.5 billion. And I mean, I saw a discounted cash flow model, guys. This is when people, you know, analyze a company and base it like 10, 12 outs. It was to 2034 on Moderna. And in 2032, they were projected to have over $100 billion in cash on their balance sheet. They're in phase one. $100 billion.
Crazy.
More than now, that more cash than what Apple has in its balance sheet, right? Because Apple's, I mean, the conditions are so ripe for you to take so much risk, because if you get in trouble, the government's going to bail. And that's one thing we should be talking about, because, it makes so much sense to take on leverage where, look at the two companies with the best balance sheets in the world is Apple and Microsoft. What are they doing? Bond offerings like crazy, yep. Right? So they don't need it, but hey, you know what? If you're going to give me almost free money, which I guarantee I can make a better investment return compared to how much I got to pay in the interest, now look at all the risky companies doing that. You're promoting risk, and that's what we call that moral hazard, my friend. That's why we're more leveraged ever. Interest rates are low. You're promoting people to take on more risk, and if they're wrong, you have the government bailing them out. It's to me, it's just, you know, again, 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2. But as an investor, you have to realize that it's a risk on market right now. And
I'm going to say it again: socialized capitalism is what's happening. Yeah. So let's kind of move on to China, because you mentioned that you saw a lot of things in China back in January, and you're very concerned about it, particularly related to the coronavirus, the spread and the Wuhan and all that was going on there. But now we have all of a sudden China making a semi-power grab for Hong Kong. And then President Trump comes out with some wishy-washy commentary about, you know, we're going to take away most favored nation status and maybe put some sanctions on people, but didn't destroy the phase one trade deal yet as of this point. And we don't even know how that's actually going, because there's so much other stuff going on. What does this mean? This China's grab of Hong Kong for the rest of the world?
You know what? It's a good question, because we always debate about the tariffs and everything. And I always say, listen, it's not a big deal, because we were in such a strong position. By the way, when all this stuff happens and you get into these crises, it's the companies and their biggest and best positions, they get 10 times bigger, right? Look at the banks, right? It was supposed to be, okay. So, you know, we were in a very good position where China, and people forget this, like it was nothing. In February, China was terrible. I mean, you're looking at the growth coming down. You look at it, Europe was basically in a recession pre-coronavirus, and they shut down these economies completely. So with Hong Kong, I'm not sure, but the reason why I've always debated with you and said, listen, just ignore the tariffs, because China's going to say what they want to say, but eventually it's going to be a deal. They have to, because their growth was slowing. They can't afford it. U.S., I mean, that's the greatest market in the world. You know, you can't really mess around, right? We're in a position of strength. Now, after the coronavirus, and we're seeing intelligence that, well, Wuhan, they decided to close everything in China around Wuhan, but said, you know what? If you live in Wuhan, you guys can fly everywhere you want. Mm-hmm. You know, right. So those are facts, right?
Right.
So the relationships are going to be different, and when we had the biggest tensions were in December 2018 with the trade tariffs with China. The S&P 500 was trading at 2,500. We're at 3,000 now. This is definitely going to be a different type of – this is going to – I mean, now I'm worried about China and the relation, right? Because that's the, we have the two biggest growth markets.
Right.
Okay, cutting them off is going to be significant for profits across the board. That's the U.S.'s growth market. China accounted for 40% of the world's growth in 2019. That was one of the reasons why I say you just shut down all of China – how in the hell are U.S. companies going to grow and trade at the multiple they were trading at 19 times forward earnings? Today, they were at 24 times forward earnings. They're even more expensive, and the China problem is much more real, and we were trading at 2,500, there's so many more risks and we're trading at 3,000 in the S&P 500. To me, that, again, it's one of the most dangerous markets.
I hear
that
you.
You'll see.
Is there going to be a change? What about the supply chain, though? I mean, this talk about, you know, hey, let's move the supply chain, right? Let's move it. You know, I just don't see that a t-shirt manufacturer or distributor that was making shirts and getting them imported from China, that selling them for $12, made them for $1.50, is going to be able to do much about moving it back to the United States. And those same shirts are going to cost $6 or $7 to make. And then the profitability is going to be squeezed, or the prices go up and we have massive inflation, which is the other side of this.
But what is the other side of that saying that where, because if you look at the trade tariffs and you really go back and dig into the news, there's a lot of companies that started moving their supply chain out of China. It's going to hurt margins. But you know what's worse than that? What's the worst thing in stocks is uncertainty. And right. When you're saying that you have these relationships with China and tariffs and it's impacting, you can't forecast. It's like not hedging oil if you're Walmart or Target where you have all these trucks. It's a massive expense. For any transportation company, you want to hedge it, whether, you know, it's going to be higher or lower, because at least you have a fixed cost over a certain amount of time, and that's how you can run your business. If you have your supply chain in China, you have no idea what's going on. I mean, you can't forecast. You're like, oh, okay, if you raise tariffs on my goods and, our products are going to go down 20-30%. And we saw that for some companies. So a lot of companies are like, look, we'll take the margin hit. We got to get out of China. We'll go to Taiwan. We'll go to Vietnam. And some of that's coming back to the U.S. now because they're going to be incentivized. And you know, I think you're going to see more and more companies move out of China just for the uncertainty. And Hong Kong is like a battleground, right? Yeah. I mean, it is a battleground. But right. It's like the Hong Kong,
especially
like
for the
US.
Financials. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's like the U.S. like almost defending it because Hong Kong's great free market. Look how powerful Hong Kong. Look how great it is when I'm not asking you to go back for thousands of years and change everything in the world to free markets and stuff like that. But look how when you opened up your borders, look what it did to mm-hmm. your country when you finally opened up your borders. Just in Shanghai, Beijing, and now, just start extending where you look at price per purse, price per capita, everything is going higher, but now you still want that control. And Hong Kong is just an amazing position. I don't understand why they're forcing that issue, but I mean, I understand it, right? It's the government, but that's a battleground. I don't know what's going to happen there. I thought the China part right now, that risk is significant, and it's not even a blip on anyone's radar. Nobody cares.
I don't even think we've gotten to the bottom of the blame game for China right now, where people mm-hmm. are really, they're like, hey, we just had to spend $2 trillion, $1 trillion, $5 trillion, whatever the number is, and it's your fault. And I just think, especially in an election year, especially with a lot of countries looking to shift the blame from maybe not acting properly, or if they did, or even whatever, just the fact is they want to have someone to have a way to point a finger at that somehow this China situation is not going to get better too quickly. And I just don't, that's another one of those put in the question mark field.
Remember guys, last time it was just trade tariffs, right? We know it's probably going to get a lot worse this time around. At the S&P 500 in December 2018, it was trading at 2,500. It's trading at 3,000 now. But yeah, the whole China problem. Yes, I agree with you. And you just mentioned how with China, which spending trillions, forget about trillions. I mean, there's 100,000 Americans dead, which didn't have to happen. Yeah. If they would just open and said, hey, we got something bad. We have something going on. Close everything. And we didn't really know that to January. This was going on in November. I've been following this probably more than anyone because I was just so involved in it. In China, I have great contacts. And I was able to say, like, oh, my God, all these companies, Apple, Starbucks, Levi's just opened up big shops there. Everybody started closing. I'm like, that's their growth market. I don't know. For me, it's just surprising even to see the mark come back this much.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, guess what? It's time to play a game. You didn't know.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know about this.
Nope.
Surprise!
Bring it on.
So, I know you're a big sports fan.
Huge.
Right? And, mm-hmm. We're going to restart. We're going to start up right now what's called a bit of a fast pitch. We're going to we're going to bring up Finn Sports. We're going to throw out some this or that's. And get your comments on it, what you think about it. And so hopefully we can bring a little bit of some intellectual sporting to the show today to give you a flavor for what it was like back in the good old days, Frank, when you could go see a game.
I know.
I don't know about you, but I watched several hot dog eating championships from the 1980s recently.
Kobayashi.
Totally. They look unbelievable how what they looked like back then. Yep. I watched, I think, a couple of World Series from like the 90s recently. Mm-hmm. A lot of golf, like long drive championships over the years, right?
Yep.
Kind of like, all right, I know who wins. I wish I could bet on this right now, but okay, I can't. All right, here we go. We're going to start slowly. kind of an underhand pitch at first.
Don't go too fast because you know I can't handle it. Yeah. I like to talk really, really fast. I'm going to slow it down for everybody.
Slow it
down. Second.
This is the first.
Good.
All right, ready? Fed rates, higher or lower from here?
Lower.
Lower. I'm going to mark that down. Lower. Let me add a sidebar discussion between the pitcher and the catcher here. Are we talking about negative rates or just lower?
Yes, negative rates.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Negative rates. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
I don't understand it either, but we're going to have negative rates. We're going to have to. I mean, the amount of money that we spent, again, we talked about it earlier. I won't get it. Okay, let's go. Keep going.
All right. Markets, undervalued, fairly valued, overvalued, generally speaking.
Overvalued, but be cautious, and you have to be in this, especially the secondary names that didn't participate in the rally, which are now participating in the rally, which are the cyclical value names. A lot of money pouring in. This week alone, you've seen it.
Yeah, 2-1. Two to one on value versus growth this week on performance.
Yeah, so there's still a lot of companies. I mean, you look at the market heavily dominated by just a few companies in the S&P 500, 30%, which is pretty much tech. There's a lot of companies still down 50% off their highs, and the economy's opened back up. So you're going to see momentum in those.
Well, not only that, if the high frequency traders, the algos, want to keep the market up from here without getting ridiculous, they have to bring the belly up, right? I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. They can stop. You could start already seeing some of the cracks in the tech recently. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep, absolutely.
But
Netflix.
Right, yeah, they'll have to start bringing up the bottom levels. They'll have to program that to come up because that can keep the market level while taking the top down. Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Here we go. Stocks or bonds?
Stocks aggressively, not bonds. Stocks aggressively. Dividend, specifically dividend paying stocks. The yield on the S&P 500 compared to the 10-year is the widest it's ever been in history.
Yep.
Now it's getting to the point with the 10-year at 0.7, and you're looking at inflation, which is like 0.3 now, but it's going to be – I think inflation is going to explode. And that might sound crazy right now, but in 2 years, all the money
– Heather, where was that discussion? I want to talk to you about that. I said inflation is going to start getting crazy, right?
Right now, there's no place you can get yield. There's trillions in bonds earning. I could see a lot of them. I mean, you're buying J.P. Morgan at a 3.5% yield now. 5 years from now, is it going to be higher? I don't know if it's going to be higher. Maybe not, you know, low interest rates and, you know, net interest margin is low. But I think it would probably be a little bit higher. You could earn a nice 3.5% yield on the largest bank in the world. That is fully capitalized right now.
Yep. Small caps or large caps?
Oh, right now, small caps are another thing, the widest gap between large cap and small caps. Yep. And this is before this week started. We've never seen that on I'm not going to call this a recovery, but when you see stocks come up and come back and the risk on trade, it's very surprising to see large caps outperforming small caps on something like that. Usually never happens. It's a massive gap. And you're seeing that make up this week where small caps really have a lot more upside. It's a lot of, you got to be careful. You got to be a stock picker. A lot of these companies are in trouble, but they are U.S. 85% of the Russell 2000 is U.S. based. The dollar is going to go higher. These are very, very, they're going to be very strong companies in the right position, but just got to be careful.
In a weird way, the Fed had the back of the small caps in that a lot of these small caps are lower quality bonds that were outstanding. Now they're able to issue more debt because the Fed is just gobbling it all up.
Pushed out debt for low employees. Yep. Getting 1%. You got to pay on that debt. Yep.
Okay. All right. The wind up, regional banks or majors?
I think regional banks, the majors have had a nice move recently, but I mean, you're looking at those smaller regional banks have really, really gotten crushed. The banks, if you're looking now, right, they're still down 30% off their highs.
Yeah.
They've made a nice move this week, maybe, you know, into the week before. But I think regionals safe here, and you're going to see large cap banks. I think you're going to see a lot of M&A for some of those companies that aren't as strong. But our banks are going to be more – you think they're powerful now. The large banks are going to be more powerful. But – depends on what kind of investor you are. I got to say that because if you look at for yield, Wells Fargo's what, 6-7%? You're looking at Citigroup, all these great yields, but you could take on a lot of risk with those other banks, which are trading at one of the sectors that are cheap right now.
And by the way,
regionals.
Speaking about Wells Fargo, you got to love the stick save that happened when Wells Fargo was falling off a cliff last week or the week before, and all of a sudden the rumor comes out that Goldman's going to buy them. I mean, like, what? Really? Saved the day. They were down like 8% that day.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
All right. Coming up, consumer discretionary or staples?
consumer discretionary. Definitely.
So I mean, you're basically from everything we've talked about right now, it's the rotation trade that you're talking about.
Exactly. It's the rotation trade, but it is a dangerous market, guys. Yep. It's incredibly dangerous, but that rotation trade is there. I would never in a million, any other condition going back in history, if I lived throughout 100 years or whatever, I would never said by discretionary with unemployment on going above 20%. A GDP next quarter, and it's going to be negative every single quarter. GDP every quarter is going to be negative.
But who cares?
Nobody cares. But I would tell you, discretionary is crazy. But at the end of the day, these people on unemployment have more money now than they've ever had. Yep. I mean, they're getting checks and check, and more's on the way. So, yeah, they're going to be spending. They're spending on discretionary items right now. You're seeing it.
All right, we got a relief picture coming in with a stronger arm. Okay, you ready?
Go.
Biotech or tech?
You know what? Biotech has so much momentum. I bet you'd say biotech because, you know, from a trading perspective, it still has so much momentum. But the technology companies are real. I mean, AI, cloud, when you have these pandemics or black swan events, it forces you to change. It forces older people who go to the doctor. Now you can go online and do virtual visits. You're being forced. And when you do that, there's permanent change in businesses like commercial real estate. I mean, come on. Now all of a sudden Google, everyone's like, wow, we're getting the same productivity of people working at home. So the technology companies, the profits are real. You're looking at Adobe's, Microsoft's. I know they're expensive and they've run up. These companies' business models are unbelievable with Amazon with cloud coming in.
The one thing about Adobe, Microsoft, Salesforce that I just was wondering about and thinking about, it's not, I didn't act on this, but the concept that, and they have different kinds of models, but these are per seat type of companies where they have software as a service that also you pay for how many employees you have. If there's less employees, you wonder if that some of that's going to be cut down. Now, maybe some of the larger companies have corporate or enterprise deals where they just pay for the block, you know, like up to 5,000 employees. You know, you just pay this price, you know, not paying per seat. But it's something to think about. All right, here we go. Disney or Apple?
Oh, that is such a great question.
I'm telling you.
Those are two companies that I covered that I said were insanely, they're more overvalued today, both of those companies, and they've probably been at least 20 years, including Apple. But they're in the middle of that growth and the economy's opening up. And I mean, they're going to come out and say, they already came out and said in July, we're going to open up. I mean, you're looking at Disney's profits went from $5 to $2.50, and they're going to go to $3 next year. And the company is trading at a massive growth mode. Same with Apple. I mean, like all these iPhones are going to be sold. Everything's great. I don't know. I would say Apple here than Disney. Disney right now at Disney's levels, I thought it was expensive at 100 to 120. So, yeah, okay. I would say Apple.
All right. Tesla or Ford?
Tesla.
Okay.
I can go into that if you want to.
The next one. Here we go. We got a sinker coming. Mm-hmm. Amazon or Walmart?
Oh, that's good. I like that one. Amazon, because Walmart was a play that even we put in our portfolio as one of the only stores that opened to the coronavirus. Yes, they have more online, but cloud is the greatest business ever, and Amazon's still the dominator. Even though Microsoft's catching up, they're still the dominator in cloud, and that's a massive money generator.
All right, last one, curveball. Gold or Bitcoin?
Both.
Oh, how do we do that? You're a change-up batter. You went lefty and righty right there.
The conditions to buy both of those with the amount of money spending, alternative coverage, they exist for both, but gold bugs and Bitcoin bugs hate each other, and it's either or. You should have, I would say, put maybe 5% total, maybe 2.5% in one, 2.5% in the other. Bitcoin is for real. I mean, it's a payment. People use it now. I mean, it's growing. It's a massive market that institutions can get into now. And gold is just, I mean, the case for gold is very exciting. However, people don't like to buy gold when the market's going higher, right? Because gold's kind of like a stable thing.
Yeah, but it's been almost an all-time high again.
Yeah, it's gold prices. Gold stocks have sold off a little bit as the market has been going up. Right. So just be careful there.
I hope you enjoyed that, Frank.
Yeah, it was cool.
Well, fast pitch with Frank Curzio. Yep, he's always swinging the bats. You know, he's got those two bats over his head and he's warming up and all that. Anyway, thanks for joining me today. Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. How can people get in touch with you and understand more about what you're doing, your newsletters and all your services?
Thanks. I mean, with Wall Street Unplugged, we interview each other a lot, probably every 2 to 3 months. That's one way, or you can go to our website, CurzioResearch.com is another way, or email directly, FrankCurzioResearch.com. We do Frankly Speaking, which is a podcast. I just answer your questions, and it's mostly for subscribers. So, just Curzio Research, you'll be able to find out everything that you need if you're interested.
So slowly, I want to take it down from 78 revolutions per minute to 33. What's the email again? Because I always get confused when you say that.
I say it so fast.
I don't even know what it is. It doesn't even sound like
so
it's an address.
So when I say it on my podcast, I say it's Frank Curzio Research.com, and no. I go, it's Frank at CurzioResearch.com. That's actually how I say it because I love talking fast in New Yorker. Try to change. It's difficult, but it's Frank at CurzioResearch.com, and I appreciate you letting me say that again. Thanks for the plug. I appreciate
anyway,
it.
Listen, the best to you and your family and your kids and your That's mom, it. Of course. I hope she continues her process of getting better and all that. And I'm looking forward to one day standing at least 6 feet from you so we can spend a little time and get back together. It's been a long time since you and I have been actually in the same vicinity.
Yes, we'll definitely get together, I promise, next couple months.
All right, Frank Curzio, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me on.
That's going to wrap it up for this show, episode number 664. All the information that we talked about will be on the show notes over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Make sure, if you haven't done so already, to register for the Monday pop-up webinars where we do Q&As. Any question that you have on your mind at all is fair game. So you could check it out. Go register over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Top right, you'll see a little button that says register, which gets you in on the webinar. Other than that, I'll see you again next week. Hopefully you have a very safe, a very profitable, a very enjoyable next week. Get some sunshine, get out there. And, of course, do it in the safest manner possible. I'll see you again next week. Thanks for joining me. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.